There seemed to be a great deal of hand-wringing on Tuesday night when Dana White did not offer a contract on the Dana White Contender Series to Bo Nickel after Nickel's first-round submission win. I think now that we've heard from Nickel's manager, Malki Kawa, we can rest easy, I guess, for lack of a better term, that the UFC did not pass on Nickel. And in fact, there's a deal worked out, it seems, from Kawa to get Nickel on another Contender Series card and then evaluate where he stands as far as his progress. And this, according to Kawa on the interview with the Ringer MMA podcast, was his intention from the get-go. He wanted to get Nickel some experience and see where he was as far as that experience goes in his progress as an MMA fighter. We know he's an NCAA wrestling champion, and we know he's good at MMA, but we don't know if he's great yet or has the potential to be great. It looks like he has the potential to be great, but Kawa wanted to see where he stood and then judge where to go from there. And during the interview, he said that he had seen some fighters get pushed maybe a little too fast, and then they reach a level where they can't progress above that level. They get kind of stuck, and then they can't move further than that, and then they kind of get jammed up. And as we know in MMA, once you get jammed up, you kind of get forgotten. And so he wants to avoid that with Nickel, and I think that is a very smart move. And I think with the weight division he's in, I think it's the correct move. And he said that when he had that young, well, not young, but more inexperienced heavyweight fighter that went right to the UFC and had some success in his first UFC fight. He said he probably could have done that with Nickel, and I agree, but there's levels in the weight divisions. So you have a heavyweight, and we all know heavyweight division is not the deepest division, and also heavyweight division, yeah, you always have a puncher's chance to win. And so he figured that fighter can go right into the UFC and develop there because he's got good wrestling skills and good striking skills, and that power and wrestling translate to success in the heavyweight division. Nickel, great wrestler, developing striking skills in a different division, I think in the middleweight division, maybe a lot deeper than the heavyweight division. And so you want to gauge where that fighter is at before you throw them into the deep end. Again, I think that is the correct move. So the move here is, and this is again the management's decision, not the UFC's decision, not any other promotion's decision, not even really Nickel's decision, because I think during the interview, he said that had he wanted to, he could have got Nickel into another promotion pretty easily and got a big payday for him. But the idea is here to develop him into a potential UFC champion. And so slow road is probably the better road here for Bo Nickel. So the idea is get him this first win, which he got fairly easily, get him back in there in September, see what he does in the second Contender Series fight, and then gauge where he's at. And maybe he continues on with his developmental contract at that point and goes to a different promotion, but still under the UFC's, still has a UFC deal, but gets more experience. Because the idea here is not to push him as fast as we've seen some fighters get pushed. And I, again, 100% the right decision. And if you know anything between Malki Kawa and me is we don't agree on much. I don't know if we agreed on anything ever. But we agree on this, and I think he is making the right move with Bo Nickel. And then we will see in September where he stands. Maybe he goes into the UFC then. Maybe he goes to a developmental deal with another promotion. But I think the idea is that they have a once-in-a-lifetime fighter here in Bo Nickel, and they want to handle it the right way. And it's not often we see that in MMA. Usually, when you have someone with talent, they get pushed and they potentially get chewed up and spit out. And I think better safe than sorry in this situation. I don't think he's going to get the kind of a build that a professional, talented young professional boxer would get, because the UFC is not in that business. They don't pad records really. I mean, maybe to a point, but then you get to that point where you move up and you're gonna be facing ranked opponents and you're gonna be facing tough and skilled foes. And I think, while he might get a slower road than some fighters, he will not get a slow road. And because of that, I think the handling of him in this situation is 100% on the mark. And we'll see where it goes in September. But the idea that the UFC passed on Bo Nickel was kind of, I believe, laughable from the get-go. I think the idea here was that he was always going to get a developmental deal from the UFC, and then it was going to move from there. And so, no, he is not a typical fighter who is going in on that $10,000 contract on the Contender Series. I don't think so. I'd be very shocked if that was the case here, because we're looking at a potential, like I said, once in a lifetime talent, and it's going to be handled correctly from the management point of view. And I like that. I like that a great deal. And we'll see where it goes in September. But Bo Nickel did not get passed on by the UFC. Dominic Cruz has been critical of Daniel Cormier in the past. They had a kind of, I wouldn't say a falling out, but a kind of a talk about how Cruz felt that Cormier doesn't do the work when they are on the UFC commentary team together. And this came up again when Cruz found out that Cormier is going to be calling Cruz's fight on Saturday against Marlon Vera. And when asked if he thought that Cormier was going to do the work in advance of this fight, Cruz said, "Doubt it, doubtful, but again, I've learned to let go of control. DC's going to do DC. I call him the Golden Fluffer. He's like, whatever you want to hear, he will say it and he will make you love him. That's his gift, the gift of gab." And I think he nails a lot of things that are true here about Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier is a likable person. He has a likable personality. He's a fun guy. He's a funny guy. He enjoys what he does, and that comes through on the broadcast. And that comes through when he's just being Daniel Cormier. I mean, he has always been that guy. I remember I interviewed Daniel Cormier I think it was before his first Strikeforce fight, and he was an incredibly likable person then. He knew how to get you to like him, how to get you to appreciate him, how to get you on board with him. And he has not lost that ability. And that's why he is one of the main UFC commentators. And, you know, Cruz is right here. I mean, the Golden Fluffer thing may be a little rude, but I mean, that's Cruz saying it, not me. What I found funny about this was Cormier's response, which came via Twitter. And he wrote, "I just wish everyone would just stop twisting Dominic's words, man. It's frustrating. We're friends. I know you heard him tell me that he loves me yesterday at the end of our interview. No one could fake that." Which, first, let me just say, no one could fake telling someone they love them and then take advantage of them and abuse them. That happens all the time in life and in the real world. And this kind of came it kind of came across as a to me as kind of the ultimate all due respect or no offense. You know, I said all due respect so I can say what I want. Well, I said I love you so I can say what I want. That's kind of how that felt in Cormier's response to what Cruz said. But the funniest part of this is that Cormier didn't address or even attempt to address the big issue or charge from Cruz, and that is he does not do the work before the events. He didn't mention that at all in that tweet. That's the issue. That's the big problem. I don't think Daniel Cormier is as bad as Joe Rogan in that respect, but he isn't great either. And that's not fair to the fans, that's not fair to the UFC, and that's not fair to the co-workers and co-commentators that work with Cormier. It's not fair to Cruz, it's not fair to Paul Felder, it's not fair to Michael Bisping, or any other color commentator who works with Daniel Cormier. It's not fair. And it does everyone a disservice. If I had my druthers, the UFC commentator role would be just as competitive as the role of a UFC fighter. If you fail, if you don't, you don't get to work. If you, to quote Dana White, if you don't eat what you kill, well, then you get replaced or relegated. I think folks like Cormier or Rogan are a little too comfortable in their roles, and they kind of get the idea that they have a job for life. And I think a little pressure would do everyone good here, and it would definitely improve the commentary team. So if it was up to me, there'd be a lot more competition, a lot more review, a lot more talking to these guys and women and saying, here's what we expect of you, and make the expectations clear, because maybe that's the problem too. Maybe the expectations aren't clear. Maybe there aren't review process. Maybe it's just, this is where you're working, who you're working with, and when you're working, and, you know, do your job. Which, okay, then it falls a lot on the UFC. But big picture here, I wish the commentators that don't do the work did the work, and I wish that the commentators that did do the work were rewarded more than the commentators that didn't do the work. And that would mean more Cruz, more Felder, more Bisping, less Cormier, less Rogan. So Dana White did a, I guess, kind of a GQ question and answer thing where he answered questions that were allegedly put to him via social media. And one of the questions was about fighter pay. And in the response, White said, in part, it's never going to happen while I'm here. Believe me, these guys get paid what they're supposed to get paid. They eat what they kill. They get a percentage of the pay-per-view buys, and the money is spread out amongst all the fighters. My question here is, and this is something that I think might get lost on folks who aren't so well-versed or so deep into the UFC, when White says here they get a percentage of the pay-per-view buys, I think the wording here, and he didn't do this by accident, the impression that he gives in this to a non-MMA crowd is that every fighter on the UFC roster gets a percentage of the pay-per-view buys. And we all know that is 100% not true. It's not even always, the main event fighters don't always get a percentage of the pay-per-view buys. It's a very limited number of fighters who get a percentage of the pay-per-view buys. And don't forget, there's only 12 or 13 pay-per-view shows a year. So at most, 24 to 32 fighters getting a cut of the pay-per-view buys, that's not a big percentage of the UFC roster. That's not a percentage that really would make any kind of impact on the UFC roster. If the UFC wanted to, you know, back this up and give everyone a portion of the pay-per-view buys and divvy out a little more pay in that way, that would be great. But they don't. So that they get a percentage of the pay-per-view buys is the main event fighters, and not always the main event fighters. And sometimes it's more than the main event fighters. If it's title fights, more than one title fight on the card, maybe the chances that there'll be more than two fighters getting a cut. But it's definitely not a majority, and it's definitely not even a majority of the pay-per-view card that gets a chance to make a portion of the pay-per-view buys. So this was worded not poorly, because White chose his words carefully here, and it's misleading to those who might not understand who is they in this situation. They is not the entire UFC roster. Islam Makhachev took some offense to Charles Oliveira calling for fights with Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz rather than Islam Makhachev, and here's what he had to say. and this was on the Cormier's podcast. Charles is very good. He has a good win streak. He beat a lot of tough opponents. But for me, it's embarrassing when the UFC lightweight champion asks for someone like Nate Diaz or Conor McGregor, who last won like 5 years ago. Nobody remembers when these guys win some fights. He tried to call for Diaz, McGregor, but he forgets my name. And when they ask him about me, he says he needs money or something like this. But when he fights with Dustin Poirier or Justin Gaethje, he doesn't think about money. Now, when he says he has to fight Islam, he either tries to say, I want to fight in Brazil, I want to fight at the end of the year, or I need some money. So Makhachev has a point here. And the point is that Charles Oliveira, now former UFC lightweight champion Charles Oliveira, wants a big money fight. But more than that, he wants a big money, lower risk fight. So if he can get the same amount of money or more to fight Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor than he gets for fighting Islam Makhachev, well, why wouldn't he go after Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor? Because those are lower risk fights. And so if he is going to fight Nate Diaz or Conor McGregor for the vacant lightweight championship, the way Charles Oliveira sees it, and this is correct, is that I can fight Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor, win the UFC lightweight title, and then parlay that into a champion's wage in my next fight and make more money. Because the goal here is, in Charles Oliveira's mind, and should be in the mind of every fighter who is going to be or fighting for a title, to win that title and turn that into cash. And so Charles Oliveira says, this is the easier route, fighting Nate Diaz or Conor McGregor, and I'm 99% sure I'm going to win those fights. And then that moves me into a title pay, and that moves me into bigger paydays in the future. Now I fight Islam Makhachev, and you know the odds of winning are drastically reduced when compared to a fight with Nate Diaz or Conor McGregor. And so now that's a high-risk, high-reward fight. So the risk is increased exponentially there. The reward's the same if he fights Diaz and McGregor. So why would Charles Oliveira put himself in more danger? So say if he beats Makhachev, he's in the same boat. If he loses to Makhachev, which again, more chance of losing to Makhachev than Diaz or McGregor, now he's a former UFC champion and his pay reflects that. And we know, and I'm just going to use Tyron Woodley here. Woodley went from making $500,000 and I'm going to assume pay-per-view points for when he was a champion to making $200,000 and I'm going to assume no pay-per-view points when he was not a UFC champion. And so if Oliveira loses to Makhachev, well, now he's cost himself probably $1 million a fight. As opposed to if he beat Diaz and McGregor and won the title. Now, if he beats Makhachev, he's in the same boat. But the big picture here is, why wouldn't Charles Oliveira go with the low risk, high reward over the high risk, high reward? I don't blame him for that. Makhachev, like I said, Makhachev has a point. But the point, I don't see that Charles Oliveira is in the wrong by trying to get the same amount of money and follow the same route by taking an easier fight. Some people might say that's silly, but hey, take a chance. It didn't work out. He took a chance, and I don't blame him. Jamal Hill. I've been impressed with Jamal Hill from the moment he first got interviewed in the UFC post-fight. Because he is a low-key. He's just so low-key. He doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't beat his chest. In fact, in the most recent fight after he beat Santos, the level of Cormier's voice over Hill's voice in the post-fight interview was crazy. It almost seemed as if the production team had to boost Hill's voice to get him level with Cormier. That's how low key he is. And he had just beaten a former light heavyweight title challenger, but yet there was nothing there that said that he was cocky, that he was overbearing, that he was boastful. He was just being himself and he didn't need any of that stuff. He didn't need to be cocky. He didn't need to be boastful. He didn't need to raise his voice. He just was low key and, you know, this is me. and this is what you get. And I appreciate that, because in a world where every fighter is just trying to outdo every other fighter in being loud and aggressive and boastful and braggadocious, you didn't get that. You don't get that from Jamahal Hill, and that is fantastic. Now he's even taking things a little step further, and he's doing this calmly and respectfully, but he's saying, hey, you have these guys that are getting title fights after two UFC wins. I think he said 7 UFC wins and 5 stoppages. These guys have 2 wins and 2 stoppages, and they're getting a title fight. Why don't I get a title fight? Got a point. I don't think it's going to reward him with a title fight. I think he is behind Teixeira and Błachowicz here, but it might work. And so shoot your shot. And Hill's shooting a shot. And I think more people should get on board with Jamahal Hill here and the way he's handling himself. And I think if he keeps up the way he is going, he might not fight for the title in 2022, but he's going to fight for the title in 2023. That's for sure if he keeps winning. PFL dropped the ball in a big, big way. Two fighters who were supposed to compete in the semifinal round of the tournament could not do so because of visa issues, and then they had to be replaced. This is something that should never happen. It shouldn't happen when the UFC books fighters, or any promotion books fighters in a fight, and then they can't get into any country because of because of a visa issue. But to book a fighter in a tournament with a $1 million prize and not clearing all the visa issues up beforehand, that's a big issue with the promotion, and that falls on the promotion. You just cost two fighters potentially $1 million because you didn't do your full research before the events, and now they're out of the running. And it's not fair to them. It's not fair to any fighter who's potentially looking at signing with PFL in the future, because if this isn't something that they're going to get their hands around and fix now, it could happen again. It can't happen again. It cannot happen again. It shouldn't have happened in the first place. I hope there's some kind of way that's going to work something out for these fighters that had the visa issues and are no longer in the running. But no, this is a bad business move, and it could hurt the promotion's ability to land free agents in the future. And it needs to be fixed. It should have never happened, but it needs to be fixed immediately if the PFL wants to continue to attract big-name free agents. Because this is just an egregious error that could have been avoided.